G'day, this is Stuart Emery, and you're listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show.
Kick-Ass.
Whoa, that's Kick-Ass.
Welcome.
Make your life better?
This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Hey there and welcome to the show. And this is coming to you live from the international headquarters of the Kick-Ass Life here in Kelowna, British Columbia. And honestly, I'm getting ready and tomorrow. What is it? It's Wednesday. Wednesday tomorrow. We're leaving for Belize. And so I want to dedicate this show to all the people who are coming down to our private island just off the coast of Belize in a UNESCO World Heritage Site, a marine sanctuary, Thatch Cay, or Thatch Key as we call it. And people are flying from Australia. I think we have 6 or 7 people coming from Australia, 54 hours to come and grow themselves, expand themselves at our advanced training program. So it's going to be absolutely unbelievable. I can't wait to be down there in the sunshine. It's really cold here in Kelowna today, which is unusual for our part of the world. But anyway, have a great guest for you. Before we talk about the guest, I wanted to share one of the reviews on iTunes. And please remember, everyone, if you could take a moment, go to iTunes and leave a review and a star rating. It really helps us as reach more people and change more lives. So please do that. This is from Aaron K. in Nashville, Tennessee. He says, always dropping wisdom and knowledge. He says, this podcast can change your life. I started listening to the podcast because in my job, I cover the entire state of Tennessee, which means I do a lot of driving. I learned about the Kick-Ass Life while listening to the interview of David Wood on the Entrepreneur on Fire with John Lee Dumas, and I subscribed to the podcast immediately. The podcast has quickly become my favorite. And if he goes on to say, he says, my only complaint, there are so many nuggets of wisdom shared during the show that I wish I could write them down, but can't because I keep having to drive. All right. So anyway, Angus, SNSD, says, inspiring interviews, great people, many backgrounds, fun and respectful, honoring people's greatness. It always reminds me to expect great things from people and life. Thank you, Agus, I'm sorry. All right, there's lots of others there. And again, just to remind you, if you can, leave a review on iTunes, that would be awesome. Today's show, this guy was actually inspired by the show, and his podcast is actually, it has the word kick-ass in it. So he listened to the show, was inspired, started his own podcast called Kick-Ass Dad, and he's doing a great job. And really, I love how really wise he is in this arena. Parenting is hard enough, but if you're a parent or grandparent or great-grandparent or an auntie and uncle or someone who wants to be a parent, you're going to get lots of good stuff from this show. But I want to start with a song, wonderful Paul Simon, Father and Daughter. And Paul Simon is really amazing, but just listen to the words of this song. It's so cool. Here we go.
Hiding under your bed, I'm gonna stand guard like a postcard of a golden retriever, and never leave till I leave you with a sweet dream in your head. I'm gonna watch you shine, gonna watch you grow, gonna paint a sign so you'll always know. As long as one and one is two, there could never be a father loved his daughter more than I love you.
Wonderful Paul Simon. Don't forget, if you want the show notes, we leave lots of great stuff on the show notes, great quotes, some book ideas, again, lots of things to read there, but plus all the links to the song. So if you don't know a song and you think, oh, I like that, go to the show notes. So my guest today, as I say, he started the podcast entitled Kick-Ass Dad, Passionate Parenting in a volatile world. And I've spent some time with this guy, he's a really cool guy, has some great, great dreams about really bringing some consciousness back to this planet and really doing some stuff at the local level. So I'm really, really proud of his, the fact that he stood up and found his voice through the podcast. And the fact that his vision is so big and it's really attracting some great people to him. So sit back, relax, or don't. Ride your bike and pump hard, or push those weights, wash those plates, walk that dog, whatever you're doing. Enjoy the wonderful Michael Madalini. So here I am. Looking for those words, as I always look, thinking, you know, you got someone great to chat to. How do you feel? Checking in? Well, I feel excited, of course. I feel incredibly excited. And this guy is somebody who really has a very, very gentle heart and a very, very fierce spirit. So that's a great combination. So, Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. It's great to be here.
Yeah. I was on your show just recently, and here you are on mine. This is, I like that. I like that little flipperoony.
I like the flipperini too. It was fantastic having you on the show, and you've been kind of my mentor moving into this podcasting space. So to have you on my show was an extraordinary honor.
Well, yeah, and congratulations! You really came out of the gate with a great, a great idea, and born in your own sort of human experience. So we'll dig into that in a second. Tell us about your show first, so that people can be immediately going to their computers and saying, I'm going to subscribe to that show and listen to this guy.
Yeah, it's called Kick-Ass Dad, Passionate Parenting in a Volatile World. And it was actually something that I heard on your show was look at successful people and model successful people. And so I had a great experience and, you know, being a dad, and we can go into all that. But that was kind of my launching pad was, okay, so I've got this message. Well, how do I get it out there? And so I said, okay, kick-ass life, kick-ass dad. I love it. And so that's how the show was born. And we've grown a lot. We got 60 episodes and we're 5-star rated. And just the feedback has been immense.
Well, you know, I think, again, when things are born for and started for the right set of reasons, I think the public will come and they will follow. And let's talk about dads, because I think it's an interesting, it's such an interesting journey. I'm trying to find the right word there. But you know, the art of being a father to a girl, the art of being a father to a boy, very different experiences, but I mean, it can be really a very challenging journey for a lot of men, right?
Oh my God. It's so challenging. And I think they're, one of the things that I noticed when I was looking into this space was you don't see a whole lot of magazines for dads. You don't see a whole lot of shows for dads. It's really, it's kind of lacking out there. And I was like, man, this is kind of sad, because I've got friends who are coming to me going, man, I'm a Facebook stalker of yours, and I see you with your family, and you guys are doing amazing things, and you're having so much fun. And I go, well, first of all, it's not all roses. We have really, really hard times. But it's in those hard times and it's facing those issues that we really come together as a family. And so that's kind of what the show is about. It's about understanding, you know, I talk about putting the oxygen mask on yourself first. So it's not about just trying to, you know, be the best dad you can be. It's, you got to be the best guy you can be. And I think when you're happy and you're living in a space of, passion and purpose, then you can be a great parent. And I think that's what's kind of lacking out there. We're not getting a whole lot of that direction. I think Homer Simpson and kind of these guys on TV are kind of the model of what our society has deemed fatherhood. And I think it's a shame.
Yeah, you know, it's I suppose the real shame is you've got these kind of wounded guys wandering around teaching their children, and then when the children aren't listening to these wounded guys, they're listening to Homer Simpson. So, you know, this next generation, really need to have this information so that they can step into fatherhood in a more elegant and connected way. But I mean, you know, when we look back into, I mean, you're a bit younger than I am. How old are you?
I'm 34.
Yeah, yeah, you're a lot younger than I am. Okay, so, but you know, so but there, sort of in my generation, you know, it was really seen. Children should be seen and not heard. You know, when things didn't go well, it was always a beating. There was no chat about it. There was no let's sit down and have a chat and see where you're at. It was like, hey, you know, take this fist to the face and then go and do it the other way. So we did. We have seen this sort of this baton pass of wounds that sort of come down, if I can use that term. And I, you know, we don't need to go into the sort of, you know, the victim side of it, but certainly the wounded side of it. A lot of men grow up not having a deep connection to their fathers. Is that something you're seeing a lot in your work?
Oh, it's huge. It's absolutely huge, David. So one of the things that inspired me, the Dalai Lama said we can change the world in one generation. And I truly believe that. But we can't do it as long as we're walking around as the, as you say, those wounded men. And we have to be those transformational people in society and make a difference in the next generation. And one of the things we talk about on the show is being, you know, being a parent is important. But being a coach and a mentor, and those are three distinct and different stages of being a great parent. So when your kid is young, yeah, you want to teach them not to run to the street. You want to teach them not to touch the stove. So that's telling, right? So we tell our kids where to go and what to do. But there comes a point where you have to shift and become a great coach. And that means asking great questions of your kids and starting to understand where they're coming from, because they've got these minds of their own. Now, I know when I was a kid, when I got to that stage where I should have been coached, and my parents had no idea, nobody knew this stuff back then, but I rebelled, right? So I went for the drugs, I went for the alcohol, I went for the cars and so I was doing really bad stuff. And so what I'm finding with parents today is that they're still in that mode and doing and modeling what their parents did with their children. But what I'm helping them understand is there's another way. And it's just like with coaching, no answer is as good as the answer somebody comes up with themselves. So how do you get your kids to come up with their own answers? And I think that's where asking great questions comes in.
And then you talk about the mentoring stage. So you talk about the telling, the asking great questions. What's your definition on the mentor side?
Right. So the mentoring side is when they come back, right? They actually want to listen to you again. And so you can say to them, hey, so, you know, can I share a possibility with you? Can I share my experience with you? And then once they say yes, then you start to lay out some other paths and opportunities. And that's where the mentoring comes in. It's getting your kid back. You know, it's like you lose your kid, right? It's like when they, you know, turn into their teens, it's like you get stupider every day, right? As they get more, into their teen years, you get dumber from their perspective, but they'll come back. And when they come back, that's when you have that opportunity to be that mentor.
Sure. And I want to give all moms permission to listen, because I mean, even though we're talking about dads here, you moms, you know, this is good stuff and good fodder for you. I mean, I think that, Michael, the reason why you chose the father realm, A, is because you're a man and you have a unique perspective for men. But also, like you said, there really isn't a lot of materials out there. You don't see Oprah for men a lot, right?
Right.
A lot of that work she does is really sort of targeting women, and you see that in the audiences. You see very few men who followed her work. You're the modern day Oprah. Look at that.
Well, thank you, David. I appreciate that. And it's funny you mentioned that, because our female listenership is extraordinary. I was actually very surprised to see and get all the feedback that we've been getting from females. But females are loving the show because we're talking about things that just aren't being talked about. And one of the things that I love about your show is that you're talking about things that people are afraid to talk about. And I love the fact that you love Oprah. And I love the fact that, you know, people can, you know, men can begin to start opening their hearts, because that's where I think a lot of damage has been done. And men tend to close their hearts down and think that their emotions are the enemy, when in fact, the emotions are an extremely important part of who you are. And I believe that men and women both have masculine and feminine energies. And it's up to us to kind of begin to embrace both of those and be a whole person instead of this kind of half wounded being.
Sure. Well, when you look at, if we look at the energy, masculine and female energy, and we see, I mean, if we talk about a woman for a second, if a woman's running a lot of masculine and or a lot of her negative energies, so if she's being, you know, naggy or being bitchy or whatever. Like, I mean, some of the things, and by the way, women, these are the women, the terms my students use with me. No, I'm not trying to label those bitches. No, that's not what I'm saying. But, you know, when we see a woman running those darker energies, those negative energies, typically they're in a place or in a relationship or something's going on in their life that's pushing them into the dark side of their energy, because we all have the dark and the light. And consequently with men, we see men who are running sort of the not so positive or the darker energies in the masculine and really not sort of claiming the masculine role. Typically, again, they're in a situation where they it sort of pushes them down into that dark side. But I think that what you're fully aware of and what I really understand through my work is that we all have both, and it is possible to live a life where we can live in the light and have our masculinity and our full force and be a gentle, kind, open, emotional, centered man, right?
I think that's exactly right, David. And I think that's where our society tends not to teach that. And I think, and I'll say generally the media. And I think that we have kind of overcorrected when it comes to men. I think men have been put in this space where, okay, so we've been the abuser for so long. Now we need to completely feminize men and now everything will be okay. And I think we're finding resistance in that from men. And I think what we need to do is, you know, not promote masculinity, not promote femininity, but promote humanity. And I think that we all come to the table with unique gifts, talents, skills, and ideas, and we need to embrace what we have available to us, and instead of kind of forcing roles onto the genders. And I think that's where we kind of are missing the boat here.
Sure, but I totally agree with you, and I love that picture in my mind. I will say though, there's nothing sexier than a man who has he runs his full masculine energy and is completely centered and has that sort of that femininity running through him as well, right? I mean, because that's the end game. Even with our children, I mean, if we're completely in our masculine, then we're completely tough and that sort of that stereotypical father role. You wait till your father gets home. Again, that's why we see a lot of the wounds, you know, at the hands of the father, right? Especially with the men, with the sons.
No, that's a brilliant point, David, is that women do want to, they want their men to be strong and tough and powerful. And that's where, that's what I want to be. I want to be that for me and for my wife. And so to your point, but also having that gentle energy of love and humility and compassion and grace. And I think when men can fully embrace that sense of what it is to be an amazing human being, that they, you know, it's important to be this big, masculine, tough guy while having that compassionate, open, loving heart.
Sure. So when we look at then, I know that, you know, a lot of your work's around service and really bringing out greatness. And before we sort of go into that thing, I really want you sort of to give us more of an idea about this show. And sort of when guys are listening in right now, what are you finding? What are they learning? And what's some of the takeaways that we could impart on this audience to really encourage them to sort of come play with you and come really listen and learn? Because this isn't a one-shot deal. This is a much like the Kick-Ass Life. I mean, I can't get people to sort of change the way they live by listening to this show once. It's just sort of this ongoing dripping, and where you start hearing things sometimes two or three times where it starts to sink in a little bit, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so when I first started the show, it was just me writing and sharing content. And one of the biggest things that I found was that I'm not a perfect parent. And I'm always going to screw up, and I'm always going to make mistakes. And so,
Hallelujah! Thank goodness. Right. Now, everyone out there, hold on. Before you go on, don't forget what you're saying, because I don't want to interrupt you. But this is the greatest piece of advice I got from Blair Singer, who is one of my trainer coaches. He's one of the top trainers in the world. He looked at me one day, he says, "You know what I learned?" I said, "What did you learn?" And I was just starting out, and the reason I got into personal growth was because I was such a crappy dad. I mean, I was really, all the poison from my own mom and dad were coming out of my mouth, the things I was saying, how I was acting. And he says, "Everyone's going to screw up their kids." He didn't use the word screw up. And it kind of gave me a little bit of just to relax a little bit, to say, you know, we are going to make mistakes, and it's all right. We can make mistakes and still end up with great kids and great relationships, right?
Boom. That's exactly right. And I think that's one of the biggest things. So my first my first myth. And so if you listen to the show starting at the beginning, the first myth that I expose is you don't have to be a perfect parent to be a great parent. And it is in our screw-ups. That's where the wisdom is. And that's where the gems are. So it's taking those screw-ups and then using them to our advantage and learning from them and becoming a better parent and a better person because of that. I always say that our children are little Zen masters, right? That these little mirrors that walk around and just mirror exactly what we are. And anything we hate about ourselves, we see it right in our kids, right? And anything we love about ourselves,
don't
we see
say
it in
that.
Our kids.
Don't
I
say
know.
That.
I know. But it's true.
This whole responsibilities thing sucks. Let's stop that right now.
Right.
Well, this is really interesting, you know, because I got two very, very different kids, and I always kind of bash heads with the older one. Do you find, and I see that even now, we had one of our friends come over yesterday, and two little girls, and, you know, older kid, mom, and the older kid bashing heads. Do you think it's because when we're given the first child, so often, if we're not innate parents, which I think some people are innate parents and some people just aren't, do you think it's because we overparent? Parent, or we're so scared of the first one that we sort of, you know, we sort of create our own little monsters. Is that what's going on?
I really believe that, David. I think it comes from our own insecurities, and the more insecurities we have, the more we try to overprotect and overparent. And I think that's what creates that unhealthy connection between parent and child. I think that if you're able to begin to, and that's why I always say the self-healing is so important, right? The 100% responsibility for your own life is so important, because once you can take ownership of that, then you can begin to let your kid go a little more and you can see how amazing they are. But if you're looking in the mirror every day and you're not liking what you see, that tends to be how we look at our children. And so how do we begin to make those shifts? And I think, you know, listening to people like you, listening to people like me.
I thought you said listening to shit there. What did you say? And then he said, that's what I heard. And they said, listen to people like you, listen to shit. But hold on, you said something now. I don't want you to run away with that one, because I want you to get back to what you just said, because it's so important. The idea of what we see in our kid that we don't like is the thing that we see in ourselves that we don't like. That is such a profound and an amazing, I mean, if that's the only thing people walked away with, that every single time they're looking out at their kids, and let's be honest, it's not just their kids, it's every interaction. But let's start with the kids here. If we're seeing the crap in our kids, it's the crap we don't like about ourselves, right?
Absolutely. And to your point, David, it goes so far beyond that. It goes to every other experience and human interaction that you have in your life. And that's a scary thought, because if I'm hating somebody or fearing somebody or disliking somebody for what they're doing, and then I have to own that, like my reaction to that, I have to own it. Now, it's not saying that you're, you know, if you don't like child molesters, you're a child molester. That's not the point. The point is, why are you having this reaction? And so what are you then going to do about it? And I think that's where personal responsibility comes in. So if you're experiencing these negative emotions when you're seeing something in life, well, maybe that's a call. Maybe you're being called to do something. But more specifically to the point we were just making, when you're looking at something in your kid and it bothers you, it generally is something in yourself that is bothering you. And that's a tough nut to crack.
So talk about a little bit. I mean, how many kids do you have?
I have three.
Wow. You didn't get the memo after the second one then? Like when they outnumber your hands, that's one too many. Is that?
Well, I was going for a starting five, David, but we just, we fell short. We actually had twins first, a boy and a girl, and they're 10 now. And then we had a lovely surprise after that. We actually, we fell for some, I guess, mythology that you can't get pregnant while breastfeeding. Not true, folks. Just so you know, that is not true. So we ended up having, so now we have an 8-year-old as well. My wife and I were also foster parents for several years, where we had 7 foster kids over a 2-year period.
So you've really earned your stripes. And twins, my goodness, you know, I mean, you talk about, you know, are they identical twins or?
No, boy and a girl. Okay. So they're fraternal. Yeah. And they could not be more different, David. It's so funny to watch, because we're like this very open, you know, hippie new age parents, and we'll let him, you know, I don't care if he plays with trucks or Barbies, it doesn't matter. Right. So that was kind of the mentality when I'm going into it. But I'll tell you, he went right for the Legos, the trucks, the destruction, and she went right for the pink and the pretty and the fluffy. And, you know, to say that these kids don't come into this world with predispositions, I think is I think it's just not true.
So let's talk about a little bit, just again, to help some parents out. What are some of the, we talked about myth one, which I really enjoyed. What is some of the common mistakes that parents are making that is an easier fix? You know, I mean, we talk about, you know, self-love. I mean, that's one where that could be a lifetime fix. And,
right.
And it's good to notice, and but having greater conversations with self, that may not happen overnight. However, there's some stuff that we can be doing right away that can really add to the harmony and to the sort of the evolution of a child. And I think all of us as parents want our children to grow up to be great people, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that, and one of the things that I found is love is not enough. Just because you love your child doesn't mean you're doing what you can be doing to get the best out of them. And I think that's a common misconception. So for me, like, I'm having a lot of challenges with my oldest daughter right now, because she's very mature, and she wants to own the household, and she wants to be the boss and be the leader. And my son is like not so mature. Like, he thinks he's an airplane. So it's
I still think I'm an airplane. What's going on? I'm not growing up till I'm 60. That's me, man.
And I'm with you.
Hey, what kind of airplane is he?
Well, I'll have to ask him in a little bit. Uh-huh. But that's the dynamic, right? And so she's like trying to, you know, really force, you know, him to act a certain way, and she's just getting so frustrated. And so my gut reaction when she starts yelling at him is to yell at her, right? So like, she's yelling at him, and I'm like, why yelling's not going to solve anything, right? And like, as I'm yelling at the child, right? So it's like, how do we begin to model the behaviors we expect out of our kids? So for me, it's going, okay, noticing that reaction, not shutting it down, but just noticing it. And that's like that's kind of a very Zen way of thinking of things. Like, notice how you feel and then make a decision. Is this the action I'm going to take, or am I going to choose another action? And so the action that I choose to take is not going to be immediately yelling at her. The action I'm going to choose to take is say, okay, you know, ask her to stop, go sit down and take some deep breaths and calm down. And then we're going to talk. And so then we sit down and talk, and I begin to ask questions. Like, so why do you think it's okay to yell at your brother just because you're angry? And then start to solicit some feedback. And a lot of times you're going to get shut down. They're going to be like, I don't know. I don't care. All right. You know, but it's in that kind of sitting with them and continuing to ask great questions and kind of pulling out what they already know. Because she knows she's not supposed to yell at her brother. But if I yell that at her, it's going to be a whole lot different than her telling it to me. And that's where I begin to see the shifts in my own kids, is when they start to come up with the answers themselves, and I don't model the behaviors I'm trying to parent out of them.
That's really great. Hard to do, you know, especially again with the conditioning. You know, because sometimes I blow up, right? And I go, and now I get over it really fast. And both my kids are incredibly adaptable when it comes to emotion. So they can have a complete meltdown and be over it in minutes because they get it out. And so obviously they've modeled that. But you know, I'm not very enlightened sometimes when I lose my rag and I sort of my volume goes up. So I will do my best. Wasn't it Gandhi, though? The famous story of Gandhi, the woman comes up to Gandhi and says, hey, listen, you know, you need to speak to my kid, and because he's eating too much sugar. And Gandhi says, okay, I'll do that, and disappears for 2 weeks and comes back and speaks to the kid. And the mom says, how come it took you 2 weeks? He said, well, I ate sugar. I had to go home and stop eating sugar before I could come and speak to your kid.
Wow. Yeah. No doubt. Well, and David, you know, it's like, I'm going to blow up. You know, I'm going to lose my cool. I'm going to yell at my kid. It's going to happen. And that leads me to myth number two, is mediocrity is not the status quo. So yes, we're going to blow up, but just because I do that doesn't mean I'm going to then say, well, I'm a crappy parent, so I'm just going to be crappy along with all the other crappy parents. And I think that's where people go after they make a screw up. And I'm encouraging people, don't go there. You screwed up. Come back. What are you going to learn from it? And how are you going to rise above? Because I hear so many people just, you know, they just whine about their kids to each other. They just whine. And it's like, okay, like, that's cool if that's what you want to do, but you could actually be sharing experiences that your kid did. And then what what you did and made it better. And now we're in a community where we're helping each other be better parents instead of just whining.
Well, I think the old adage, it takes a village to raise a child, is so, so true. And of course, we've got to a point now where a lot of people don't even know their neighbor. You know, I mean, really don't have a relationship with the people around them. So, and I suppose that whole village raising a child was and still is in a lot of cultures, very prevalent, right?
Oh, and that's critical, and that's why I'm so passionate about community gardening. We just launched a community garden here in our neighborhood to get people out of their houses and get talking to each other, because that's exactly right. It takes, and you know, we've got single parents and we've got single moms. You know, if there's a single mom on my street and her kid's out playing, and I can get outside and go play basketball with all those kids and be a positive male role model, I'm going to do that. And if it's getting them down to the garden and us growing something together, I'm going to do that, because it does take a village to raise a child. And we, as kick-ass dads, need to start getting off the sofa. And I love football as much as the next guy, but I'm not going to watch it for 8 hours a day and not throw the ball with my kid.
Right, right. So let's and obviously, how many myths are there that you have? I mean, obviously, I hear a book coming out pretty soon here.
Yeah, it's actually in the works, David. It's called 10 Parenting Myths and How to Destroy Them. So that'll be out in February. We are so that's something that's pretty big in the works. We're also doing we've got coaching programs with Kick-Ass Dad. I've partnered with a gentleman, Jay 40, who from the Greatness Zone. And basically the premise is that when people just don't know what they're passionate about. And I think that's kind of the bottom line. We're kind of in this lazy thinking, and we're just, you know, mindless hustle and bustle through life, and we're comfortably uncomfortable, right? So we're just, you know, it's okay. You know, we're in our Western society. We've got enough food to eat. We've got this and the other, but we're just not happy. You know, we've got all these people on medication, all these people committing suicide, and they're just, it's because there's an inherent lack of happiness. And so what we do is we help people figure out what they are passionate about. And then we've got activities and assessments that help them understand what they're good at. So it's like, you ever watch American Idol, David?
I have. I think I've seen it once or twice, yeah.
Yeah, I don't watch it anymore. Because actually this reason is why I don't watch it, because they just make fun of people who aren't very good at, but they love it. So somebody comes in and they love to sing, right? But they're just not good at it. Well, you're not going to show up in a big way in the world if you're not good at it. So we help people understand what they're good at and then what they love to do, and then figure out what success looks like to them. And that's where you get to have the big results in life. And then you start stepping out of your comfort zone, something you talk about constantly, David. And that's something that actually helped me in a huge way, was being able to face what's uncomfortable and get out there and put myself out there. And that's what begins to make the difference for your life. And then figuring out what your fit is in the world. How do you find that the world's greatest need and match that to your greatest joy? And that's where you start to really live life in a big way.
Sure. Who's that great big basketball player? The real fun guy. What's his name? The huge.
Oh.
O'Neal something. Was it
Shaquille O'Neal?
Yeah. It's like him. If he was passionate about being a jockey, there's just some things he won't be able to do, right?
Right. That's exactly right.
As you were saying that, I saw Shaq on the back of a horse. his feet touching the ground.
Right.
But no, that's so true, right? Because I mean, there's physical constraints, there's passions, there's things that we are naturally born and naturally adept at. So, you know, that's awesome. So let's talk, give us a couple more myths, only because I don't want to give them all away, because I want people to buy the book when it comes out. But I do want to sort of give them a good tease. So let's go into another myth, shall we?
Absolutely. So one of the biggest things that I've found is that you know, we try to rewire the child, right? So kids come into this world and they have some predispositions. They're passionate about certain things, because the brain actually over time becomes hardwired to be good at certain things. So for example, my son, like, he has an engineer's mind. He loves to build. And he can go from page to page to page and really create something methodically, step by step. And what parents tend to do is they tend to tell their kid that they need to follow in their footsteps, or they need to be in this particular job. They need to be a doctor or a lawyer or whatever that is. And, you know, one of the things that we've found is that kids are going to excel in what they're brilliant at. So instead of forcing them into the, you know, trying to force the circle into the square hole, we're giving them, the idea is to give them tools, great tools to help them leverage the unique talents that they already have. So I don't think I've really worded that myth very well, but I mean, that's the idea.
I love that. I mean, the way I heard it was, you know, kids will excel at the things they're brilliant at, and that alone, for parents that want their kids to excel, quite often we're always pushing our kids. And I tend to not want to push my kids into something, but once they're in it, I tend to want them to try it long enough so they can know if they're going to be good at it. So if I don't see them ever, like my son plays drums, and he recently told me, and he's a good drummer. And he said, Dad, you know, he said, I'd like to quit drums. And I said, well, yeah, that's no problem. I said, you know, but we'd already bought his, you know, his lessons, and he's been playing for about 5, 6, 7 years. I said, will you do me one favor? Can we make an agreement? He said, what's that? I said, would you at least try playing one time in a band with, you know, for over 2 or 3 months just before you quit, just so you know what that's like? Because I feel like he's got so good, but he's never had the band experience. And he said, yeah, that'd be great. So we made the agreement that he could choose to opt out of drums altogether, as long as, because he's put in all the time to try that. Now, is that, would you agree that it's a good thing or a bad thing? Or should I just say, no, walk away? Well, what's your thoughts on that? Because I don't know.
No, I think you did the right thing. And so the idea is to encourage, okay, it's like if you take your kid to a buffet, right? They don't know what they like and what they don't like. So your job as a parent is to help them try everything on the menu and then figure out what it is that they like. And once they do that, so yeah, it's not always easy getting them to try that little extra thing or do that thing that you know they're going to like, but they're telling you they don't. So I think as a parent, your job is to open those doors and encourage them to do what they may not have otherwise done. And then if you find out they stink at it, let it go.
Yeah. Awesome. I like that. And that's, I see that with, I got friends who are really sporty, and one particular guy is just really, really brilliant at sports. And his son is like the least coordinated. I've got one of those sons too. He's just like, you know, but it's just, it's okay. You know, and I don't mind. He's a real art. My son, my youngest son is real arty, and his emotions are on his arm. His, you know, his heart's on his sleeve, big hearted, you know, loves it. And I have no push into which direction they go in. I just want them, when they go to the direction, to give them as much chance as possible to find the passion they have within it. But do you see that a lot where a parent, I see this with boys with the wounded hearts, because I work with so many men, is that disappointment of the father because the son doesn't live up to his expectations. So he was in the NHL, the kid doesn't like hockey. Suddenly, every time he looks at the kid, there can be that little look that's enough to wound a child, right?
Oh my God, David, it's so true. And you know, like I would say myself, I mean, you know, my father, he's an amazing man, an amazing provider, but he was off providing, you know, and he wasn't always emotionally available to me. And I was that same kid. I was the artist. I love sports too, but I was that super sensitive and just like, you know, I'd cry at the drop of a hat. And I felt And I felt that I wasn't going to measure up. I wasn't going to be you know, a good enough man because I was too sensitive. And that was a message that I got. And it wasn't until later in life that I realized that just wasn't true, you know, that it was okay. And to your point about, you know, parents want the NHL player, you know, it's like our kids, I mean, I don't know what your spiritual beliefs are, but I believe we all come into this world with a purpose. And our kids aren't our kids aren't here to be our purpose. Our kids are here to have their own purpose. And I think that when we can begin to, as parents, be the gardeners of the child, not the, you know, whether, I always say that it doesn't matter, you know, your kid's either going to be a pine tree, an oak tree, or whatever kind of tree they are, you're not going to change that. All you're there for is to fertilize and water. And prune occasionally. That's your job.
Well, it's like that. Do you remember Khalil Gibran in the book The Prophet? His verse sort of etched into my soul a little bit. He talks about, he says, your children are not your children. They're the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, they belong not to you. You may give them your love, but not your thoughts, for they have their own thoughts. You may house their bodies, but not their souls, for their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you can only visit. Oh, you cannot visit. not even in your dreams. You may strive to be like them, but seek not to make them like you. For life life goes not backwards nor tarries with yesterday. And he talks about, he says, you are the bowls from which your children are, as living arrows are set forth. And it, you know, anyway, so it's a really beautiful verse. But I often think of that, you know, that first line, you know, your children are not your children. They're the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. So that's a beautiful verse.
David, that is such, I've got goosebumps like up and down my arm right now. Thank you for that. I've read that, and I've actually, we share that on the show. That is such an important point. And we share that on the show constantly. I went out of town recently, and I had one of my friends, one of my really close friends, my brother, and he came over and watched our kids for us. And one of the things that really struck him was how differently he treated our kids than his own kids. And so he did some soul searching. He said, well, why is that? Why was I that much more compassionate? Why was I that much more patient? Well, because they weren't your kids. And I think that's where, if we truly believe that our own kids are not even our own kids, then maybe we start to treat them a little differently, with a little more grace and compassion and patience and understanding.
You know, I have to put up my guilty hand there, because I resonate with that. Sometimes I all kids seem to resonate toward me, and I always have this real kind of sense with them. But I can be a little bit of a taskmaster with my own kids. So yeah, I fall into that category. So I'll have a little soul searching on my own later. Hey, I want to talk about a little bit about service. I can't believe how quickly the time's gone. Now, obviously, you know when it's a great guest, when the time flies by, right? you talk a lot about service and this idea of your partner and you sort of seeking out the greatness. Do you want to talk a little bit about how a life of service really plays out in living an incredible life and really showing up as a great parent?
Oh my God, it's so important. And the feeling you get when you get out there into the world and begin to. So again, it's understanding what you're good at, what you're passionate about, and what is your vision. So for me, I have a big, hairy, audacious goal, and that's to create community centers in the inner city that give kids access to music, guitars, pianos, dance, and agriculture, sustainable agriculture. That's what I'm passionate about, because I can imagine what that would look like for me getting into these cities and giving these kids a hand up. And I think that's one of our greatest untapped resources in society, is these kids who are struggling just to get by, just to get from day to day, when they've got these amazing gifts just waiting to be tapped. And so for me, that's my service. Like, I believe, because I'm a musician, I'm a gardener, you know, I think that food and music is probably the most inclusive language of all of humanity. Those are two things that we all gravitate towards. We all have different religions, but those two things really bring us together. And I think that creating that unity and uplifting children is what's going to get us to a better future for the next generation.
Mm. Have you ever heard about the five languages? It's dancing, singing, crying, laughing, and groaning as the five languages. And I teach that a lot in my, I don't necessarily point it out, but in all my programs, those five languages are always a present. And when I teaching advanced trainers, I teach them about the five languages, how to include those languages in to any kind of program. Because if you do, what you're going to find is that the depth of connection and the speed of learning just accelerates at such a huge, huge, huge speed. So.
Oh man, that's so powerful. And, you know, I think that if we can begin to incorporate these things, and I love that you're teaching that, because that's the message that is so important, because we do have a lot of broken people out there, and broken men and women. And, you know, men are taught not to cry, and it's like, no, you know, it's like, how great do you feel after a good cry? It's like refreshing. You're like light as air. And these are the things that I'm actually writing a book also with Amy Alcini from Recycling Happiness. And the idea of the book is do the opposite, right? So our society is heading in one direction, but, like, you know, heaven on earth is in another direction, and we got to completely flip it. You know, if we're going to raise people up to back to where, you know, where they are in their most powerful state and, you know, compassionate, loving state, then we've got to shift the way we think. And so we got to begin to do the exact, it was actually funny. The reason that I remember that, or the reason we came up with that, was because I watched a Seinfeld episode. And you know how George is, I don't know if you watch Seinfeld, but I used to watch it a lot.
I like Seinfeld. I don't see it often anymore, but I used to like it, yeah.
Yeah. And so George, the George character, is this cynical, always thinking negative thoughts, always thinks the worst is going to happen, right? And Jerry's like, do the opposite. So one day he just does everything opposite. And he talks to the person he wouldn't talk to. He asks the girl out he wouldn't have asked out. And he's got a new career, a new job, a new girlfriend. And it's like, you know, wow, what a zinger. Like, how many people are out there in life just like thinking negative thoughts and doing negative things and being too afraid to step out of their comfort zone? Do the freaking opposite and you will be blown away by how your life changes.
I was giggling there because that's going to be a really short book. You open up and all it says in there, do the opposite. That's it. It's all over. Yeah, you got the whole book in the, do the opposite. A three-word book. I love it. So who's writing it? You or Amy?
We're both writing it. I'm writing the first two words and she's writing the third word. Because the third word is longer, so she's going to take that one.
But that's the you know, when I talk about, you know, going from the comfort zone to the uncomfortable zone to the unknown zone, for a lot of people, that unknown zone is so terrifying. So the habitual side of what they've been doing, the idea of doing the opposite, you know, will often take courage, right? Because it's in the face of everything we think we know. And I always like to remind people that, you know, we're going to make up a story about ourselves anyway, and it's all nonsense. You know, I mean, right. So we can recreate and write a great story, and truly we have the power to do that. You talk a lot about greatness in your work, and sort of to bring that greatness out, apart from this, you know, doing the opposite, are there any sort of tips you can give before you have to adios out of here?
Yeah. So to your point, we all tell ourselves stories, right? So we all, I call this our personal narrative, right? I'm sure you've heard this in the self-help world, your personal narrative, and that's your perception of the world. And so many of us are running around with these outdated stories, and we're living life as though these stories are real. And that's a creation of the mind. So understanding that, you know, your personal narrative is not an accurate representation of how the world really is. It's your perception. And it is by changing the way you think and your perception of the world that everything around you changes. And, you know, our media tells us that the ratio of positive to negative in the world is far outweighed by negative. But if you're thinking positive thoughts on a consistent basis, and I'll share this with you, David, I stole this from the Bible. It says pray without ceasing. And so I don't think of prayer as, please God, help me with this, help me with that. I think of affirmation, right? So, you know, if I'm not talking to somebody or I'm not like in a conversation or doing something specific where I need to focus my thoughts, I'm affirming without ceasing. I'm affirming that the world is a beautiful place. I'm affirming that I have I'm an important person and I'm in the world for a reason and I have a purpose and passion and power. And so by thinking those thoughts constantly, it energizes me to begin to see the opportunities that are all around me. And if I believe that I'm a person, wherever I go, I'm going to find enormous opportunity, all I find is opportunity. But that doesn't come from the world. That comes from me.
Yeah.
And I think that's powerful.
Well, yeah, and we are ultimately powerful. And I think, you know, I mean, I was teaching this last night on a conference call and about the RAS, the reticular activating system in the brain, you know, and so much of what we've learned about the brain has only been in the last 12 years. But, you know, the RAS, it's like the guardian of the brain. It's, if we look at, you know, the subconscious mind processing billions and billions of bits of information every second, and the conscious mind only processing 2,000 bits of information every second, then the things that we become aware of have to be sorted by something. And it's the reticular activated system's job to do that. So it will sort through all of the input, everything coming towards us. So, and there's billions of bits of information coming at, like right now, I just look at everything in my view, what I'm doing with these controls, what I'm doing in the mind, but there's, you know, there's lots and lots of things going on. But what we become aware of is what we, the RAS is responding to our constant thought pattern. So if we think the world's shitty, it's going to show us everything in the world. Like, it's, you know, one guy could be sitting where I am right now, looking out across the view saying, oh God, look at those clouds. Cause it's really gray, cloudy today. And it's like, oh gosh, wind is coming, right? Another guy like me could be sitting there saying, oh my goodness, look how gorgeous that is. How good, look at that snow. Snowflake at the top of that mountain. I mean, and it really is two people sitting in the same spot with a different conversation going on, and a lot of people not knowing they have the control manual, right?
That's exactly right, David. And it all comes down to choice. If you know about this stuff, then you have the only thing left is to make the choice. And I think that's where, and I actually learned about that from you, the reticular activating system, because that is the key element to making that shift in your life. And I can testify that it is probably the most powerful, learning experience that I ever had, was knowing that and then acting on it. And it changed my life.
Sure. And that's why, again, vision boards and positive messages and, I mean, really environment, I mean, positive friends. And coming back to, you know, we got to look at the influence that we are on our children and what they notice. They notice everything. So how we're being. I do have one question. It just went through the back of my head there. That was a squirrel moment right there. but the one question I have, and I don't know if I'm given the right I have the right to say this. I find that parents lie to their children a lot because they're so afraid of their kids not doing like drugs. Let's talk about drugs you talked about, you know, drinking and doing drugs. And you know, I came through that sort of journey as well. But I see a lot of parents who they just won't tell their child at the appropriate age what the truth really was and let their children sort of learn from their experience. I hear a lot of don't do this and don't drink, don't do that, don't da-da, as opposed to, hey, listen, what happened with me when I was younger? I did this. This is what the outcome was. And so this is some of the lessons I learned. What's the right way to approach that? Do you have any thoughts?
Oh, I have a ton of thoughts, David.
Well, good, Chris, you're the dad guy.
Well, first of all, part of it for me was when I grew up and I got into drugs and alcohol, one of the main things, I knew my parents did that, but my father hid it from me. And that actually, me seeing that hypocrisy actually fueled my fire because I said, oh, you're a hypocrite. I'm going to go do this more. And so that was part of the fuel for my fire. So I think, if as a parent, I've already, you know, we've already had talks with our kids about, my kids are 10 and we've talked to them about drugs. I told them, you know, that I've done drugs and what they are and how they affect you and the whole gambit. And I think that if we're hiding things from our kids, then they are going to know that because they're master truth seekers. They will find out. And then they'll think we are liars. And so then what else are they going to think we're lying about, even if we're telling? It's like the boy who cried wolf, right? Sure. So the more you fib to your kid, the less they're going to believe you and think you're somebody of value to be that mentor or to be that coach, because they're not going to trust you.
Sure. And, you know, I mean, one thing with my kids, I'll share this with people because I think it seems to be, based on what I'm seeing my kids doing right now, and 13 and 15 is a very susceptible age to drugs and, you know, and that kind of thing. And I've always encouraged my children to have a drink at the table. Like, you know, I mean, when I'm in France, I see, you know, 5-year-olds having a sip of wine. So I've always sort of said, hey, listen, do you guys want a sip of wine or something if we're having a glass of wine? And, you know, my youngest son used to, he'd take a sip of beer and now he's like, no, Dad, I'm good. You know, he's like, no, I'm good. You know, but the things I don't want him to do and I point out that I don't want him to do, they'll do in spades. So I think to your point, that such a child mechanism is don't do this. All right, really, Dad? Well, watch me because this is my power. I'm going to go do it. But the one thing I did to really get my children thinking about when the time comes that they have to make a choice, because I realized the time's going to come. And it may come, you know, when they're at their lowest ebb, they may come right after a fight. There may be a lot of reasons why someone says yes to smoking a joint or whatever they do, right? And of course, there's some pretty potent drugs out there. So how I've contexted it around my kids is I've said to them, because they both love to travel, they both speak multiple languages, they both want to spend a lot of time in Sweden, where their mom's from. My son speaks French, well, they both speak French. So, you know, we talk a lot about traveling around the world and doing stuff and all that. And so I put a context around it. They know everything I've done in my life. They know I've been to jail. They know I've stolen. They know I've done drugs. But the one thing I said, you know, the one thing that the reason I don't do drugs and the reason I choose not to have drugs in my life is because of my liberty. And they said, what do you mean? I said, well, my passport is, I couldn't imagine, because I get caught doing drugs, that I would lose the possibility of traveling around the world and my liberty. So, you know, I choose that's where I realized my freedom was. And so my kids have this sort of thing contextually in their head around freedom and liberty, and that they could lose that if they get caught doing drugs and stuff like that. So rather than tell them not to, I've sort of shared that experience. And I just want to put that out there. I don't know if that helps or...
Oh, it certainly does. And I mean, think how much more powerful that is to a kid understanding that concept than, you know, in the 80s, we said, just say no. Like, just say no. Okay. No, that doesn't work. And so it's like, it's the same thing in a macro context, David. It's like the war on drugs or the war on terrorism or the more things we declare war on, the more it just breeds those things. It's like, why don't we declare war on jobs and like love? Maybe we'll have more of that. You know, it's like, and that's the shift, and that's the mental shift we all have to make. We're gonna do a lot better as parents, and we're gonna do a lot better as people if we're honest with ourselves and honest with our kids, and giving them a context, right? Talking about it in a big, big way, and saying this is the reason why, you know, this is where I've been, this is what I've done, and this is the result, and that's gonna be so much more powerful in teaching a kid than telling them just to say no.
Awesome. You know, I can't believe the time. We're actually over time right now. So I need to ask you my favorite last question. I'll see how much you listen to the show. What's the question I'm going to ask you right now?
If there's any other question that you should have asked me.
Well, that's one. But because we're really over time, what's the next question I'd ask you right at the very end? You know?
how they can find me?
Well, you could do that. Yeah, let's do that because we haven't done it.
Absolutely. So you can find us on kickassdadblog.com. You can also find us on iTunes at kickassdad. That's three words. And again, you know, we're just out there to help people understand that they do have the power within themselves to be more loving and caring and compassionate within themselves and show up in the world in a big, big way and make a difference and give back to society. That's what we're about here.
Awesome. And my final question would be, the show's called The Kick-Ass Life.
Ah, yes, right.
And what am I going to ask you?
The question is called A Kick-Ass Life.
I'm just putting you on the spot. So the show's called The Kick-Ass Life. And
what is a kick-ass life to me? Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I know. I know you listen to the show because you tell me about it. I was just seeing if I could catch you out. So what is a kick-ass life to you?
Well played, sir. A kick-ass life is a life that you show up in a huge way where you're doing what you love to do, where you are doing what you're brilliant at, what you're meant to do, and you have purpose, and you can see a bigger vision for your life and for yourself and for the people around you and give it back to them in a big way.
Sure. I want to share one thing with you before you go. I work with some of the top authors and writers and you know, thought leaders and seekers and probably in the world. And you're right up there. I mean, I know you're starting out, so you're as good as they get. I've really enjoyed this hour. It's 45 minutes. I've really enjoyed it so much. And you have a true talent. So get out there and kick some booty.
I'm going to do it, David. Thank you so much.
All right. See you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
I really love that. You don't have to be a perfect parent in order to be a great parent, and that love truly is enough. I told you it's going to be good. And I love the idea. Again, I really, really love the idea that that Michael was inspired by the show and really, again, using Kick-Ass Dad and really owning it. I really, really, really enjoyed the interview. Incredibly bright, just a wonderful, great heart. And I know it's going to go far, and he's going to attract a lot of people to his cause. You can imagine these gardens and imagine, you know, art centers and all the things they're going to do. It's just so, so cool. And thank you, Michael, for that. Just a wonderful. I know that you and I are connecting a lot this week, so we'll be chatting again soon. With that being said, I want to play you a song by Cat Stevens. And these are a couple of people I grew up with, Cat Stevens, Paul Simon. And it's called Father and Son. We did Father and Daughter. Let's not do a little bit of Father and Son. And this is that sort of wounded heart stuff that happens. And don't worry, dads. You know, it's never too late to say I'm sorry. It's never too late to hug first, to reach out first. And if you are out there and you've got trouble with your kids and you're distant, you know, why not reach out? And don't expect anything to change right now, but someone's got to go first, you know, and the whole world's waiting for someone to go first. And, you know, it's such an easy bridge to build sometimes, but you've just got to stuff the ego away and the pride away and just love someone through their imperfection. And, you know, one thing I'm having to learn myself as a parent, and I'm certainly not the ace parent, but, you know, is not to communicate to the, you know, the behaviors. It's really beyond that. Communicate to the heart beyond the behavior. So let's have a little listen to Cat Stevens and we'll wrap this puppy up. Here we go.
Like you are now, and I know that it's not easy to be calm when you found something going on. But take your time, think a lot. Why, think of everything you've got, for you will still be here tomorrow, but your dreams may not. How can I try to explain? 'Cause when I do, he turns away again. It's always been the same, same old story. From the moment I could talk, I was ordered to listen. Now there's a way, and I know that I have to go away. I know I have to go.
Such a great song. If you want to listen to all the words again, you can go to thekickasslife.com. It'll be in the show notes. And it really is, you know, I always think that as parents, we're all capable of wounding our heart. And if I could do it all over again, I would probably do it quite differently. I say there's no regrets in my life, and I don't regret anything. But parenting is something you kind of learn just after you need it, right? What does they say about experience? Experience is something you get just after you need it. There's one of the quotes that will be in the show notes. Join us on Facebook, davidonfacebook.com. Understand, guys, we can link arms together and do a lot of good in this world. So why not share the show with someone? You know, I know that on iTunes right now, there was something done that we lost all of our shows. There's only 10 on there right now, but you can go to the website and find all the old shows on there. If you want to share this with people, just pass it around. Don't worry. And we'll get everything fixed up. But right now there's only 10 shows showing as opposed to 300 or 400. Well, actually we'll have almost 300 now. But again, the things happen and we'll roll with it. But thank you so much. And, I hope you enjoyed the show. Again, remember to share it. See you on Facebook and go on to iTunes, please, and leave a review. And we'll definitely see you on the other side.
That was kick-ass.